Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. This evening we have the continuation of the discussion about the wonderful director, producer, artisan, magnificent Lloyd Richards. And I have some wonderful guests. Two of them were here the last time we were on the air a couple of weeks ago. And then we have two additional gentlemen who have been working on projects. So this should be a very interesting evening. I hope that you all, the board is filling up already. So please get in now and don't text me because there's nothing I can do when there's no more room on the board. All right. Let me just do a little bit of housekeeping so everyone who is not familiar with this program or is listening but not in the studio will have this information. We are about to enter into the 118th episode of Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. This is 105 of all the public episodes, and you are listening to blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. If you want to dial in during this discussion, if you're not in the studio or if you are in the studio, you've already dialed 516-453-6063. And if you're in the studio, once you get on board, and if you want to ask a question or say something about the subject that we're discussing, please press the number 1. That will allow me to know that, to recognize you and put you on the air, so you will then be able to communicate your question or your statement. Now, with all of that said, we are about at the point now when I'd like to start introducing the guests that I have. The two gentlemen that were here last week, or 2 weeks ago, I keep on saying last week, 2 weeks ago. First, I'm going to start with Julius. And Julius Hollingsworth has been in my life for a very long time. I believe we met at NEC. And then my relationship with him blossomed all the way through to the point that Julius and I belong to the same nonprofit ensemble. But let me just tell you a little bit about him again. He is a journeyman in the entertainment industry. He's been in it for more than 54 years. He started with Hal DeWitt, a wonderful name, at La Mama when he was about 13 years old. He has been the recipient of the Torchbearer Award and Ford Scholarships and the Diana Sand Scholarship. And he was directed by Lloyd Richards in The Fine in Sidney Brunstein's Window. Next, and so Julius, before we move on to the next guest here, why don't you say hello so they can recognize your voice distinctively on air. Julius?
Hello, Julius Hollingsworth here. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Say that again.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Okay, thank you. All right. Okay. And so next we have Jack Shalom. And Jack is a producer and co-host of WBAI's FM's Arts Express. He's been an educator in the New York School public school system for over than 35 years, and his relationship with Lloyd, I think he will tell you about, as being directed by Lloyd, again, in The Sign of Sidney Brunstein's Window. Now, the third, Jack, please, I keep on forgetting to let you all say hello. say hello so the audience can recognize your voice. I have four men here, so you're going to have to say who you are probably when you start talking. Go ahead, Jack. Say hello.
Yeah. Yeah, hi. This is Jack Shalom, and I'm so happy to be on your show, Lenny. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about Lloyd. It's really a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming, taking the time, taking, you know, and doing all the wonderful things that you've done thus far. And now I want to talk about my next guest, who really has been on this program before. I believe he was like on number 4 of the 105 episodes. It was April the 21st, 2021, when Chet Y came on this program. And Chet had a unique situation in that he is not in the theater per se, like the rest of us, but he's of the theater and he's of politics and he's been doing so many wonderful things of yet. But when he was on the show, then we talked about him being the campaign director for Harlem for Obama on two cycles, so 2008 and 2012. And then we then discovered that in 1988, he was an alternate delegate for the DNC, for the strategist for Jesse Jackson. So, you know, I mean, and then he has an aerospace background as a senior staff engineer. Again, he was appointed to co-coordinator for Mike Dukakis, and he was a co-coordinator of the Rainbow Coalition in 1989. And it goes on and on in NAACP, Urban War, you know, Urban League. It goes on and on and on. And he is probably one of the most charismatic speakers that I know. He is always involved in what is going on politically as well as socially in the community. So, Chet, are you here today?
Hey there. Lenny, how are you?
Yes.
I am
well,
here.
My friend.
It's so glad to be
it's
here.
It's so good. Oh, thank you. I mean, it's so interesting to have you now. You did also a pilot that we did for PBS as well as
yes.
the show before. So, you know, thank you so much for coming back and always being
and remember
willing
what we talked about.
In.
Remember
yes.
what we talked about, the intersection of politics and art.
Yes, yes. Very, very interesting how, and now it is even more prevalent in the theater today and in politics today. But I'm sure we're going to touch on that a little bit in this conversation, but maybe that's for a whole nother episode one day. And so thank you, my friend, for coming on in. And then I have a special guest that is here. For me, he's special because I really never met Scott when I was studying with his father at Hunter College. This was before he went to Yale, and he had several years there, and it was to my advantage as I transferred there from Hampton University because I wanted to be in New York to study acting. It was just something that I had discovered as a freshman in college, and I didn't have the opportunity to meet Scott Davenport Richards. But let me tell you a little bit about him. He has a range of talent. You can tell by what I'm about to say about you. He's an award-winning composer and librettist. Now, that's the first thing that really hit my mind in that he is in the world of music and operatic, classical music. In the New York City Opera has performed two of his works. Part of it was on the Vox Festival, Star Across the Ocean in Paris, 1965, featuring another guest that we've had on here with his wife, Deborah, Chuck Cooper. And so I know you know them well. And for the public theater, he completed commissions also. One I believe, is Rumble of Myth with Marcus Gardley, who is a wonderful, wonderful playwright. Then we go to the point where now that's musical. Now let's go back to when he performed as an actor on Broadway in a play directed by his father. The original role of Sylvester, if one knows Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, you know that that is the character that almost does destroy the recording session in the original Broadway production of August Wilson's Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and he assisted his father in that, along with three other Wilson works. His listing of awards is would take us until the end of the hour to go on, but I'm going to do just a few of them. He's a recipient of the Jonathan Larson, the Frederick Lowe, the Shin Family Foundation, and the New York State Council of the Arts Composition Awards. He is a professor at of composition and musical theater at Montclair State. And he is a recurring guest with NYU's Tisch School of the Arts with the Graduate Musical Theater Writing Program. So with that said, and I'm out of breath saying so much more, there's much more. I'm really interested one day in talking to him alone about his finishing up a work about Paul Robeson. But Scott Davenport, Richard, please say hello to everyone, please.
Hello, Lenny. Hello, everyone. I'm so pleased to be here for the first time, unlike everyone else.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for consenting to come in to speak. Thank you for your contribution in the arts, for the legacy that we are, that all the gentlemen here are concerned about preserving in the name of your father. Thank you, thank you, thank you, all gentlemen. So now that the audience, that you all have been introduced and everyone kind of knows, still your voices are very similar. So you're going to have to tell them at first who it is that's speaking once I start asking these questions. But I'm going to go back to the foundation, back to Julius. Julius, when did this idea first hit you, please? And tell us what the idea is.
Okay, this is how it came about. Jack, we hadn't talked in about 40 years or so, and he contacted me through my website, and we talked about, got on the phone and talked about how Lloyd had made a huge impression on us together. And I saw in the paper that they were talking about naming several theaters for Black artists. And, of course, the August Wilson had already been done, but the James Earl Jones and the Lena Horne had not been named at that point. And so we were saying, because of all the different things that Lloyd had done, that he would be an amazing person to have a street name. So we tried to in contact with different people, and it seemed like what was happening is it didn't quite happen the way we wanted it to, and they had decided on people like James Earl Jones, people with larger name
visibility. Visibility.
And yes. So
now I'm going to stop you right now because I want Jack to pick up from right there. Jack, In that,
yeah.
in realizing that that portion of it had been decided already, you were not deterred. What did you decide?
Well, we were not deterred, so we started brainstorming other ideas. And eventually what we came up with was having the city proclaim a day in Lloyd's honor. And we wanted it to be 6/29, June 29th, because that was the day that Lloyd was born, and it was also the day that he passed away. And in addition to that, that would have been a wonderful celebration, and it did come to pass, and it was a wonderful celebration, but we thought we needed something even more permanent to mark his name as such a significant figure in American theater. Because though theater people knew who Lloyd Richards was, the general public didn't know as much, because Lloyd didn't toot his own horn. So
no,
we
he
came
never
up
did. No.
with the idea
no.
of a street. So we came up with the idea of a street naming, and in particular, the northwest corner of West 47th Street and Broadway, because West 47th Street was the street where the iconic, legendary production of A Raisin in the Sun took place at the Ethel Barrymore Theater that Lloyd had directed, and which, of course, starred Sidney Poitier, and every single person in that cast became famous.
Yeah. Now, Chet,
so,
tell me.
Maybe we should pass it
now
on.
Now I'm moving fast from one of you to the other, because I kind of want to get everybody an opportunity to talk about the different levels of their participation and their thought process in this. So, Chet, now, when did you become involved in this?
I think I first became involved in August of 2022. So the effort had matured, you know, to a point, and then it became the crossroads where how is this going to be delivered politically? And the situation with deciding what streets are going to be co-named and all usually become the responsibility of the community board. And community boards are makeups of community members in certain council manager districts. And they give the go-ahead on whether a street is going to be renamed. In this case, we had to deal with Community Board 5 at Times Square. And the sticking point was that for 14 years, they had a moratorium on renaming streets, you know? And that was a hard nugget to break. And I think at the time, the Celebrating Lloyd Richards group had been frustrated by a little lack of attention to the effort by Community Board 5. It it wasn't total, but it wasn't moving. And with me, I had some experience in breaking that. But in this case, Community Board 5, the underlying argument, which we never had to make publicly, all right, was that Times Square belonged to the entire city, not just the Community Board there, and it affects the entire city, and the significance of Lloyd Richards could not be ignored anymore, and we wanted to move on with it. And the community boards actually are under the wing of whatever bureau president they reside. All right, and that meant involving Mark Levine, and also a lot of sway as far as the council person. And, you know, and we had to go pretty much to both of them and make an appeal. And we got a very good response from them, and especially the effort that Julius and Jack made personally was crucial in that endeavor. So the background or the support piece was that we put together a letter and made an effort to contact every single councilmatic district office, every single council person, and let them know about the history of Lloyd, the significance of Lloyd Richards, and that we wanted them to support the renaming of the street. So we sort of, you know, spread the advocacy in the council.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
I kept with that effort, and pretty soon we were able to do, well, there was a name, you know, of course, Jack alluded to it. It was a name change of the group. It was Celebrating Lloyd Richards Committee, I think, before, and we added 629 as a point of significance in the title. That any time that the group was mentioned, that would be in the title, and then also stress the urgency of us getting some things done by 629. So lo and behold, last year, 629, Mark Levine issued a proclamation that Manhattan recognized 629 as Lloyd Richards Day. And we celebrated that in front of the August Wilson Theater, which was very appropriate. So in working this, eventually on December 20th of last year, council passed a resolution that included the authorization of the co-naming of 47th Street as Lloyd Richards Way. And in discussing what would be a good time to have the ceremony changing the street name, eventually was resolved that 629-2024 would be a great time to do that.
Well, now that was a process, and so everyone had their own category of pushing it forward. So Scott, when did you realize, when did you were made aware of that this movement was happening about your father?
I forget exactly when it was exactly. It was maybe about 3 years ago, and I heard from Julius and Jack, and they said, you know, we want to go forward and try to do this. Is that okay? And I said, of course that's okay. I'm so pleased to be doing
yes.
And, you know, in what ways can I help? And so that was, so I've been up, they have spearheaded the whole thing. And we're so grateful that they have.
Let me just say this one thing, too. I was lucky enough to be able to get Scott's information from a mutual acquaintance, friend of both Scott and I's, and that was Julia Pearlstein.
That's so funny. I forgot it was Julia. Okay.
Yeah, it was to Julia. Julia, where to find you at Montclair. And that's so she was a great help in that way. So I just wanted, you know, to make sure that I give credit to everybody that's been such a help in making all of this come together. So yeah, she person that connected.
Yes, that's an important thing.
You met Julia as well. She was a playwright that wrote a piece about the ladies who the Radium Girls, I think it's called.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I just wanted everyone, including myself, to become familiar with the process, with the inception of it and where it is now. Before we get into another part of the conversation, I want to several times tell people when this is happening, where it is happening, so that they don't walk away from here not thinking, well, I don't know when this is supposed to happen. So can you be very specific and say what date that it is and where everyone will be able to celebrate this? Can you do that, Chet? Is that you? Is it Julius and Jack? Well, I can say
a little bit about it and take it back to Julius, but it will be 6/29, the day that Lloyd Richards was born, the day he died, 6/29/2024. We will be on the corner of 47th Street and Broadway celebrating this great man. 6/29/2024. The time is to be determined, but I implore everyone listening to this to find Celebrating Lloyd Richards 6.29 on Facebook, and you will be able to follow the happenings, and you will know before the public announcement when at the exact time and that everything will happen. But you will also get an education about Lloyd Richards. And many of the contributors to this page actually knew Lloyd Richards. They used to work with him as colleagues or students or knew him as a friend. They knew Lloyd Richards, and some of the contributions on the postings are really, really eye-opening. So that's Facebook, mm-hmm. Celebrating Lloyd Richards 6/29.
Thank you. Now, Scott, I have a question.
Yes.
Your father, you have to know, was a father-like figure to so many of us, those who studied with us, with him, those of us who worked with him. I've had the pleasure of doing both because he took me up to the O'Neill. But how does it feel to have to share such a lovely man, because mm-hmm. he taught me so much about calmness and peace. My question is, what kind of father was he, and how was it to share him with all of us all the time?
Well, I didn't necessarily have the impression of having to share him, and that's maybe one of the wonderful things he did is that unlike a lot of directors, when I was mm-hmm. young, he chose to essentially make teaching and teaching universities the center of his living. Mm-hmm. So while he continued to do professional work in New York and occasionally in Los Angeles and occasionally, you know, in Toronto, he was not a director who had to be on the road all the time. He did not have to mm-hmm. go off to, in order to make a living, do seven regional productions a year in order to like put it all
right.
together. Mm-hmm. So he was based, he was the head of acting at Hunter at NYU. Then he moved to Hunter, and then eventually he went to Yale. So what he was mm-hmm. home, and we saw uh-huh. him, and we unlike other director fathers, went to school with kids who had director fathers. We would see
yeah.
him every day, pretty much, with the exception here or there. He was extremely supportive. He had extremely high expectations of us mm-hmm. artistically. Mm-hmm. Around the dinner table, probably the worst thing you could be was a bad actor. Like there's nothing worse than being a bad actor around the dinner table. So it made us very afraid to not be. But at the same time, he was encouraging and was patient. I think for both my brother and I, he wanted us to be able to become artists, patient with the time it took to become a true artist, and mm-hmm. And we had that patience in both our young upbringing and our development as adults. I would say that's one aspect of what he did, because he was a teacher and he knew what it took to develop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I found his patience. I think that's a word. His patience was just admirable. In class, there were people when the first class I had with him was the history of Black theater. So it wasn't an acting class, but he integrated some of the acting in it. And most of those people were not, you know, they weren't artists. And his patience with people who were not that, and not being judgmental at all. But most of all, I think my lesson from him is I have a hair temper. I do. Most people don't know. that I do, but it's because of him that he used to say to me, you light up the room, but not in the right way. So he said, you must learn to light it up in a different way, Lenny. You must, and I looked at him and I had never really heard that about my temper because I could pop off immediately. But he said it in the most gentle, sweet way that I can still hear his voice saying it to me right now. And that's not to say that I won't pop off every once in a while now. I mean, he didn't change me all of that much. But it is really a very significant part of my delivery and when I direct. One of the things that I admired about him was his sweetness, his kindness, his the ability to make you feel protected and safe in his presence. When you worked with him, when you assisted him, when you worked with him as an actor, Scott, how was that? How was it? What did you observe about your father?
Well, he was, again, patient with me because I came into Ma Rainey with less experience. I was playing a young role, so it was it was sort of an okay situation because I was playing a much younger role. And so I was a kid in the group. But I was playing the Ma Rainey's stuttering nephew. And one of the things I'll never forget that he told me and the advice he gave to me is you are, in your action as an actor, you have to make sure that you are trying not to stutter. You place the impediment, but your action is to not stutter because you want to get past it. And that definition of an actor's action has stayed with me all the way, through almost everything I've done. Then when I was assisting him, and I forget, it was probably two trains running, and there was an actor who was not doing something that Lloyd wanted. Lloyd had given him a note, and I was taking Lloyd's notes at that time, and he was not really responding to this note. And I frustrated him and said, why don't you just tell him what to do? He says, no, if we tell him what to do, he won't own it. He has to invent. Mm-hmm. We have to find a way to get him to invent it for himself, so that it's true to him, that it's true, real to him. Mm-hmm. So he had the patience over three or four performances to lead him and to ask him questions that would lead him in a direction to make a more active choice or make a more appropriate choice to the situation. And he had that patience that others and other directors and especially producers or playwrights often don't have.
No, I think, yes. And gentlemen, I am going to go back to you all, but of course my discussion with Lloyd is exciting to talk to Scott about him because I find that working with some playwrights, there is a need for you to add water and stir and have instant, gratification right there. It's, they want it on the spot. And it is the patience that is needed for that actor to grow to where they need to go on their own without that definition. And it is that the direction that he gave you was the direction he gave us in class for those of us who were doing emotionally charged pieces. And there were several actors who wanted to cry, and you could see them like just squeezing, trying to get the tears out. And the point was that he said was, but the point is that you try not to cry. I mean, it's that whole being of trying not to be vulnerable is what makes it harder for you to hold it back, and that's what we see. So it was wonderful being under his tutelage. I will say that, and I am grateful to you, all of you who are doing this, because I think that it is a long time in coming. And I'm hoping that everyone who is involved in it, as Julius is always so concerned to make sure that people understand and appreciate everyone. It took a village to get it this play, this way. Now, I want to know, and I'm going to ask Jack, you and Julius, in this particular day.
Yeah.
You are the artisans now of this and the architects, I believe, of this. What is it that we are going to experience when we get it on June 29th? Do you have in mind something that is going to happen?
Well, of course, there will be the sign, there will be speakers, but I think above all, and this is maybe an aspect of Lloyd that we haven't talked about that much yet, is there'll be a sense of community. And, you know, anybody who has worked with Lloyd, it's automatically, oh, you worked with Lloyd? Oh, okay. Automatically, you're my best friend. You're my new best friend because, you know, I was lucky enough to spend a summer at the Eugene O'Neill National Playwrights Conference. I was a sound person. Actually, Scott, that's how I first met you. You were probably about 10 years old or something. I don't know. But
oh, that's so funny.
1980.
Yeah.
yeah. And
What year?
It was 1980. So maybe you were a teenager probably by then.
Yeah, I was 20 then.
Yeah. Oh, were you? Oh, my goodness. But the amazing thing that Lloyd created there was, at that time, I don't know how it is now, the plays would be put on, a reading of a playwright's play would be put on, and then there would be a community-wide discussion about the play. And when I say community-wide, I mean the sound people, the prop people, the stage managers, the other playwrights, the actors, and we would all talk about the play we had just seen. And every meal at the O'Neill was a communal meal. You know, there was, remember the beer kegs were always flowing during the whole summer, and you would have these wonderful conversations with playwrights and actors. And who was I? I was just, you know, out of college, a sound guy at that time. I mean, I really had never done sound before, but Lloyd made sure that I got up there somehow. So to me, what's going to happen on that day, as it did last 6/29, was to meet a whole lot of people who are going to spread the love and joy that Lloyd had given to us. And that's the most exciting thing that I think is going to happen.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. Yes.
I think the quiet power that Lloyd had in assisting so many people to move their careers and their lives forward in a positive, safe space. And what I talk about, safe space where you were free or felt free to actually create. And that is the magic that I think we will all see on display on that day. And I think almost everybody that worked with him has a experiences as they dig deeper, they say, oh, look, Lloyd helped me here. He didn't tell me. He wasn't someone that would broadcast the fact that he was helping people. But if he felt that you could you had something to offer, he would do that. You know, years and years later, you know, you find out, as I was digging, trying to get this done, I ran into Don Clinton Eisner, and he was telling me, oh, you know, I was Lloyd's assistant at the Eugene O'Neill, and, you know, and he had offered me a job deconstructing Shakespeare at Baird Rustin High School, and that John Clinton Eisner. And so it was like little things like that that would pop up. I did show the Me Nobody Knows on Showtime TV. Once again, it was I found out that Alvin Fields he was Scott's babysitter, and we happened to end up in this Showtime TV production. And In the Nick of Time is sort of like he almost had a sense of when the spark needed to be lit to help so many different people, not just me, but from someone like me who has been a journeyman in the business for a very long time to almost everyone that he met, he was able to do that for. Charles Dutton said that Lloyd had two natural sons, but he had many children, actors, directors, playwrights, scenic designers. And then James Earl Jones said he was the rabbit everyone was chasing. And if we listed everything that this man had done, we would still be here forever, you know. But before we end this whole thing, I do want to just say some of the names. Not now, because I think you got a whole lot of other things you want to talk about. But I just want to just mention a few more other people that, you know, helped to make this happen. So thank you. That's all. That's my two cents.
Well, you know, I think you're welcome, Paul. I haven't done anything. I mean, you know, this to me is just something that I can do to participate in my world. One of the things, though, I found about great people, and I have been fortunate enough to be around just a few people who are, I call in that category of greatness. You think that you're the only person that feels that warmth for them until you meet someone else, as Jack said. And it's a very, it's a family feeling, familial. It is, you find that great people do that. They impact people the same way, but you don't know that it's being done, and it doesn't make you feel slighted or anything. It just makes you feel a part of a great group that was influenced by someone who really had a gift of making you feel like you were the only person in the world that they were helping, that you were the only person in the world that they were instructing. And that, to me, is greatness, you know. There are a lot of other things that people associate with greatness. Sometimes it's visibility and it's fame and it's monetary, da-da-da-da-da. But I've been around several people who I noticed when I am not with them and talking about them, they've had the same impact on other people. For me, that is greatness. Now, I took that moment because I could, because it's Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Fuck. I could do that, but now, because I have to tell you that we are down to the last 15 minutes, I told you that it goes quickly. One of the things that I want to do is in these last 10, 12 minutes, I'd like you, each one of you, if you could, to just tell me what this accomplishment, once done, what is next that you want to happen to move the whole theater community forward? Jack, let's start with you.
putting me on the spot there. Okay. Well, you know, we wanted this permanent marker in Times Square, in the Broadway area, so that people would become more aware of Lloyd's name, because names disappear. You know, people disappear if they're not remembered properly. And fortunately, there are enough people who were influenced by Lloyd who will carry on his legacy. And that's really the important thing. We all know that theater is, you know, and the arts in general is the tough and sometimes a vicious kind of thing. So when we talk about the arts and humanities, let's put the humanness back into the humanities, because there's not, you know, all the forces in the world are conspiring against us not to be human. And Lloyd was all about being human. And if that message can be promulgated and passed on, then, you know, then he can smile at that. You know, he always gave the sense that there was something much larger than himself that we were working on. He's always talking about the work. And that was a work that started long ago and will continue far into the future as long as people want to carry it forward.
Scott, what do you want us to know about your father?
This is interesting because it's hard to lay his influence is not one thing or another, but it's a combination of things. He created spaces for people to work, and he didn't just create a room in which people could learn to act, although he did that a great deal. He was also an administrator of programs. He created an economic space for directors as the head of the Society of Stage Directors and Choreographers back in the 1960s. He worked tirelessly on the National Endowment for the Arts to make sure that happened. He was, as the artistic director of the Playwrights Conference, as we were saying, he was creating fundraising and creating a space for playwrights to be able to work at being playwrights, and then that transferred to Yale as a producer. And and this is very unusual for a black man during that day. During the 1980s, he influenced and controlled the entire means of theatrical production, from the initial reading of the playwright, through first productions, through fuller productions, through tours around the country to their Broadway openings. And I don't know if that has quite been replicated by anyone since. And he cared so much about the structures in which art was created. And I think that we can name a whole lot of his other students I'm spacing for a second, but this is, we can name like movie stars, but I think his real contribution is creating those structures.
Yes. Okay, you know, so, and I put this on to you all, given all of that, you know, that's where my question, what is the next achievement, hurdle, I don't know what to call it, that we in the arts will do in the same vein that Lloyd pursued so much the ability for the arts to sustain itself, to be there. I think when Jack, I believe it was you who said, you know, or maybe it was you, Scott, that it was bigger than he was. He never gave you the impression, first of all, that he had the ability to do all that or that he was doing all of that. It was always the work and it was always the arts. It was always that pursuit of it. How do we continue that? How do we continue that? That's open to anybody now. How do we continue that?
Well, I think this is Julius. I think the important thing is to continue to try and create safe spaces for artists to work. No matter how small or large the organization is, I think he was the absolute example of somebody who, long before people are now talking about diversity and inclusion, was everything about diversity and inclusion, from all the playwrights to the actors, from Kate Burton to Delroy Lindo to Ruben Santiago, who's been a real help on this project. So as long as we are working in that way moving forward, trying to really tell the story, everybody has a story worth telling, and if you're willing to work and be diligent and diligent about telling that story, you know, doing the work, then I think we'll be carrying his mission forward.
Chet, you are not, in the world of theater, but you are of the
right.
world of theater. I mean, you've performed in cabaret. You've been around theater people enough, but you have also that thought, that process of politics. You know that there has been an influence of politics, even in this, in your encountering of getting this done, that without the politics, even though there's so much theatrical accomplishment, without the politics, this the delay of how many years you talked about that before they were naming streets had to be worked through politically. How can do we now have a marriage? Do we now create a partnership with those people who are not politicians, but who are involved in the theater like you are, but have a strong political background to know how to maneuver in that world to move forward? Is that something that we have to concentrate on to move our industry further?
Yeah, I think to me, one of the important lessons of this is that we have to implant our history. We have to do it. We can't defer to anybody else. And, you know, I don't just mean that from a black standpoint. I mean, everybody who worked on this, it looked like the Rainbow Coalition. We need to take what's important, and especially what has not been properly recognized, and make sure that that happens. Now, with 629, with the date of the street co-naming, the official ceremony, this whole effort behind understanding and knowing and broadcasting who Lloyd Richards was and what he meant to Broadway and New York and theater and, you know, in general, it can't stop there. And when you get things done, and you get it done that it's actually memorialized, you know, politics affects everything. And for me, I feel, you know, you guys are all leaves of the Lloyd tree, as Ruben says, Ruben Santiago Hudson, leaves of the Lloyd tree. You students, you work with him, you know, you're directed by him. I am not, you know, but I fell into this just with association, you know, with Julius and then meeting Jack and then, you know, some of the people involved with this effort. But believe me, I became a disciple of who he was and what he meant. You know, I understood it. I didn't know him that well. I had heard the name, but I didn't understand, you know, the magnitude of this man until I got involved with him. So one of the things that was really important to me was the day that we did the proclamation. all right? And we're in front of the August Wilson, and we're in that block in the theater. To our surprise and delight, they made it so impromptu that they had closed off that street. You know, at the time we had the ceremony, we had it to ourselves. And in standing there and hearing people talk about Loy Richards, there was a feeling, a spirit that was there, you know, and you felt it, and you felt it deeply. And here it is. I wasn't a leaf of the tree. I mean, you guys were the nucleus. You know, I'm in the nebula zone. I'm just getting to know him. I felt it. So what I think should really happen, I mean, we will have the street Conan. People will, millions will walk past 47th and Broadway, and they will see the name Loy Richards, and they will ask the question, who is he? And millions, you know, from all over the world. We should try our best to make sure they can make a connection between that street sign and his legacy, who he was. And one of the minor things, or I think what could be major, is that on that corner, I want the city to allow that a square of cement has a plaque. You know, a golden plaque that says who he was, who he is, and who he was. You know, that people walking by will have at least that reference. But I think eventually, as time goes on, it will become he'll become more of a commonly known name. He's a great name in theater, and theater folks know him well. You know, but the common people like me, who did not know him, should know him. And I think eventually they will. We have to implant that. We have to try to implant that. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm dedicated to this wherever it goes, and that anything that I can use as far as my political skill set, I'm committed to doing, you know. But this means a lot. And the fact that we've gotten this far, there's so many people working on this thing. You know, it is really quite extraordinary, and I think it's the essence of what he would have directed if he directed this project. I'm just kidding.
Well, I'm telling you now that I think as humble, I think that's one of the words that I really associate his humility that he displayed. It was never about him. That I could see a nice smile on his face, but I would always, and Scott, you tell me, but I always think that he would want us to keep doing and pursuing the work.
Absolutely.
That is, I think something that that's foremost. It is about, I think, the impression that he impacted, he gave to the students, to his colleagues, to his peers, to his administrative people around him, is that the work is the most important thing. It's one of the things that I take away from that, and I use it every single day because it's it's a difficult business to be in. It's a business of a lot of different personalities, and to be able to navigate within that is an incredible achievement. And I think that one of the things that I credit him with is that, his humility and his ability to navigate and to generate progress in any environment that he was in. So, with that, I will say to you that we are 1 minute away from what I normally would end this particular show. I gave it a few more minutes because I could tell that we would probably talk a little bit longer past the hour mark. But we're going to end this now. I think, Scott, I have actually just sent you a link directly from the webinar to your email, so maybe that might help you. Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay. We're going to go to the webinar. I want to continue this just for about 10, 12 more minutes. I want the audience to see you all. I want them to hear you all. I want them, again, if on air and in camera, if we can, and I will, again, write it out, the date and of what is being done, and make sure that I have the verbiage exactly the way you all want it to be. But it is to be, a wonderful celebration of someone who has influenced so many of us and for so long that his impact will be with us for the rest of our lives. So with that, I need to say to you all that we need to start coming to a close. Is there anything that anyone wants to say on this podcast in case people hear this first before they see the video? Is there anything that you all want to say before we end this? Let me know now. Otherwise, we'll continue this in a minute or two on the webinar. And I can't thank you enough, Julius Hollingsworth, Jack Shalom, Scott Davenport Richards, Chekwa, for coming on this program and speaking about one of my very, very favorite people and a person who is responsible for the inroads that I have made in my career. So with that, you all ready to move on? Everybody?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining us on Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser, a different kind of evening this evening, a dedication to Lloyd Richards. We will be back on the air in another couple of weeks. I believe March the 13th, I will have a very interesting guest for you, and you'll be able to find all of that information on Facebook. But until then, I'd like to say that I will see you on the radio, and have a great evening, and thank you so much for listening to Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser. See you on the radio. Bye-bye now.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight,